easy to win if you just let the other team score all the goals for you. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello.
Nick, how are you doing?
Doing excellent. Definitely some interesting games this most recent game week. I know it's been a minute since we've talked to folks and there's been some good matches, but I feel like this most recent game week in particular, own goals, red cards, VAR decisions, rule changes, it had it all.
This week is, I think that there's, it's unique to soccer to a certain degree, the stoppage time equalizer.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like a dunk in basketball in that it actually does not give you extra points. It's just really impressive.
Yeah, the buzzer beaters.
So we saw a couple of those. I was referring with the line to Colorado 2-1 Dallas, which had two own goals. We had some red cards. There was a lot. There was a lot of hullabaloo going on. I also got a chance to chat. I've been catching some Canadian Premier League. It has not there's a lot of hope in Halifax for the Wanderers. So far, it has not gone exactly the best, but the matches have been fun.
That reminds me, and I didn't think I'd have a way to work it into an episode, but you just set it up. My partner was in an airport in Toronto, and there was a soccer team around, and she was trying to have an important conversation with a family member over the phone, and there just was boys everywhere, and it turns out later we deduced it was the Halifax Wanderers. Who apparently were all very polite and felt awkward about being in the way of this call.
I'm sorry that my team got in the way of that important moment.
No, I think they seemed apologetic about it also, so it's all good. She feels very much like a part of the team now. She's brought it up a lot.
Oh, I'll have to get we'll get some more. I'll get something from Halifax. Some merchandise to really
excellent. Sort of yes,
be inclusive. After the women's CONCACAF championship final that was so waterlogged and ended in penalties, Canada and the U.S. met again in the She Believes Cup final. And the result was, it was drier, but it was overall pretty much exactly the same. 2-2 this was on April 10th, so no spoilers to anyone. 2-2 with penalties. Adriana Leon scoring a penalty in the 86th minute to go to that point. Canada took better penalties this time, but Nair still saved three. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
If
your goalkeeper can save three penalties, you deserve to win. I don't. As much as it pains me to say.
Lady equalizer again, penalties again, Nair saved three again.
It's really hard to argue with that.
Yeah. I think that it was a good tournament to be a part of, and the my excitement for the Olympics only grows as we get closer and closer, and we get some more reps in this stage of the rivalry feud between these teams.
Yeah,
that is exciting. The other thing it was a minute ago now, but Miami bounced out of the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Yes.
A lot of people, I think, were expecting that. They went, expecting or hoping that this would be an avenue for Lionel Messi to get a trophy or to go to the Club World Cup. In fact, they lost 5-2 to Monterrey on aggregate, and it will be Columbus who are actually, I believe, presently engaged in the business of trying to move on in that competition.
It's true. That's my sum total of comments about it.
So sorry to Messi. I saw that at the time. That was one where Jordi Alba got sent off.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was that one.
And Miami got one late, but it was just like the middle of that match was just very brutal. The second one with the three goals from Monterrey. So that was what was going on outside of MLS. Within the walls of MLS, what's been intriguing you?
I mean, there was definitely just some good That's So MLS-y moments of the last game week, like I said. I think one of the things that has been intriguing me is, whatever reason, the timing works right for a lot of Portland games for when I'm available. So I've been watching an unusual amount of the Timbers. I feel like I see a fair amount of the Sounders and the Timbers in a regular season, but it's just been like weeks in a row. And just the number of goals they've been banging in, and particularly when we get to it, we can talk about the game against Columbus in Columbus, which, while maybe not a ton to write home about, there was a few East versus West matchups this week, and I think some of them kind of canceled each other out. But I think it's a really big road point for Portland. Obviously, they've still been kind of leaky at the back, but just their goal-scoring abilities right now and the number of players scoring for them certainly seems notable. What about you? What's been standing out to you?
That was an interesting game. I liked the first goal. Which included a little back heel that just trickles over the line.
Yeah.
It was barely touched. Wasn't there a thing with Cucho Hernandez where people thought that he was going to Saudi Arabia or something? Wasn't he dropped for a cup game, for one of these Champions Cup games? And everyone was like, there was some issue around a Columbus player being benched.
I think he played in that one, but I didn't hear.
Oh yeah, it was against there was a team policy absence against Tigres, and I don't know if we've ever gotten an example for what an answer on what happened there. But as you noted, he was playing, and he was playing and got slammed the ball into the goal. Hit the post on the 97th. That's the other thing. We also got not only did we get buzzer beaters, but we got stoppage time posts.
When you can't defend, our favorite defender, many times over, the winner of Defender of the Year, the post was there, and the crossbar too a few times.
In our early days of the season, Portland have definitely, I think, been feeling like they've been an improvement. Hate to say it, under Phil Neville. Mm-hmm. Not a Phil Neville fan, and unfortunately, you'd think they're starting to do better. They are still only 11th in the conference. It's lower than I would expect for
it is
the vibes. Or the buzz around it.
Yeah, I know. It feels weird to be talking about a team that's in 11th place as being, like, a notable team. But they are second in the West for goals scored. Now, they have conceded as many as they've scored, so that's a problem. and they haven't only they've only won the two games. But I think that, especially when we look at the Western Conference, I'd say it's a fairly surprising. Like, I feel like the table's kind of been flipped on its head so far this season. You wouldn't necessarily anticipate that LA Galaxy, Vancouver Whitecaps, Real Salt Lake, and Colorado Rapids would be the top four teams, but here we are. You might not be terribly surprised that San Jose is dead last, but the fact that Portland, Seattle, and Dallas are so low certainly, I think, raises some eyebrows. And, of course, it's still early days. Obviously, like, as time wears on, when we get to talking about Seattle, there's certain teams that we're used to seeing slow starts from them, and then at a certain point, you're also like, but what are the issues? Are they being addressed? And how much longer can this feasibly go on for before they're really going to need to make an exceptional run to make a convincing run into the playoffs?
That's true. You've got to show signs of life eventually. The match that had everything for me, again with this this issue of the table, between 9th and 10th, was St. Louis in Kansas City.
Yeah,
which that was that ended in a 3-3 draw. Maybe that's something I don't understand. If you understand the laws of football, which I might not, you can help me.
Don't look at me.
There are two goals that are scored here with shoulder charges. And when I went and watched the instant replay video on the MLS Soccer YouTube channel, they're like, that's shoulder charges. That's fine. Mm. And it's like, is it? Are you allowed to just, like, because there's two shoulder charge goals in this game. The first one, or it's not the first St. Louis goal, because the first St. Louis goal is scored by Klaus during a Fuck St. Louis chant, which I think is really funny. The crowd is very lively in Sporting Kansas City for what's being promoted as a, or what is a local derby between, you know, St. Louis and Kansas City, many of the fans may reside in Kansas City, Missouri, although the game is played in Kansas City, Kansas. The lively atmosphere, Fuck St. Louis chant, Klaus scores right after. Oof. You can't predict that.
No.
There's two shoulder charges. One of them involves Durkin, and that one is not given. And that one is a little bit more of a scenario where I would say there is a shoulder on shoulder hit, like a hockey hit kind of, but he's a little bit closer to it. He's in sort of position to get it. Klaus runs for the second one. Klaus, there is an issue. Is the Pompeo's goal is it going to be rolled off because of the way that Klaus took control of the ball, and they decided that it wasn't. Klaus runs at this guy and full on takes him out hockey style. And you can sort of analyze it from the perspective of, you know, where is the ball? Is he getting, but he makes the idea is it's that this guy made a long first touch. The ball is a little far ahead of him. Klaus does not run at the ball. I find it hard to believe how you could look at this footage and say, oh, he was making an attempt to get the ball, because the ball is like 10 degrees in the other direction. He is 1,000% running to level this guy and levels him and then walks onto the ball. Now, is it viewed that because he didn't use his feet, it's fine? You don't have to make an effort to play the ball before you hit the man, as long as you hit them with the shoulders? Like, I'm not aware of that.
I think maybe. It's pretty commonly accepted that it's really, I think it's the line is fine and it's quite subjective. I think if you're shoulder barging and you are not using your hands, using your legs to trip up or, you know, knock down a player with force, if you are just bodying them off the ball with your shoulder, I think there's more leeway given to that. But generally, you have to be making some attempt to play the ball. I'll say this. I've been called for a lot of fouls where I just get in the way and just body somebody, which I would have called a shoulder barge. So, as somebody that's received my fair share of calls against me on that play, yeah, I've never been totally clear on what's acceptable and what's not on that one.
I just think I think that it would be charging in hockey. And if it's a penalty in hockey, it's probably a penalty in soccer. That's all I would say on that. That was my thought on that one. But neither goal is disallowed. That first one, I was wrong. The Durkin shoulder charge was the Klaus goal that was scored during the Fuck St. Louis chant. Tommy scores. Tommy had two amazing goals against Miami.
Yep.
Last week, in a 3-2 loss. Tommy scores again to tie it up, but Tolent blows through Shallowy and ties it in stoppage time to make it 3-3. This was a game that had a lot of rock'em sock'em action and a lively atmosphere, and you think will be will certainly be a building block in the rivalry between these clubs.
Yeah, especially if they can both climb the table. I think that sets up a juicy rematch, whether it's before the playoffs or maybe even in the playoffs at some point, as only a point separates the two now. One of the worst defensive performances I've seen in a while, even for the Chicago Fire.
Oh, no.
Take nothing away from RSL. Chicho Arango right now, to me, he is not just to me the Golden Boot winner currently, but I think it's leader. pretty hard to argue with his, leader, not winner. Presumptive winner. It's Arango's world. We're just living in it. It's really hard to get much out of a game when it's East versus West. One team plays really well and one team plays really poorly to really pull too much away from it. But obviously important road points for RSL, and Chicago just looked completely stunned. I mean, two bad mistakes mean Arango scores within minutes of himself. Luna was the one who gets the fourth goal quite late in the game. There was an offside goal that the Fire almost had, but they just, you know, we've seen these moments of what looked like a Chicago Fire turning the page, and this must have just felt very, very painfully familiar to those at Soldier Field to see their side just fail to show up. And when you look at their lineup, like, you read that team sheet off, and you're like, this team needs to be scoring goals at the very least. Like, maybe they're not winning every single game, but that's a lot of, on paper, a fairly talented team, and there was just absolutely nothing from them in this one, and RSL made them pay dearly for it. They also at no point actually marked Chicho Arango, so there's that.
Yeah, you gotta consider doing that at least.
Yeah, you know, send a guy in there to watch.
RSL's hit third above Colorado, as noted. We're playing Austin. We're playing Dallas, and Ibiaga accidentally scored with his knee in the wrong direction.
Oops.
Although that's one of those ones where it never feels great for somebody to be on the quote unquote responsible for an own goal, but you do, I think, have to at least evaluate that one on the perspective of, like, there were people behind him.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, yeah, like, I think he's going in to try to block it, and he doesn't get the angle or the timing quite right. It also looked like there was a bit of spin on that ball. Like, I mean, we saw far more egregious own goals than this one. I feel like this one was a bit more of just, like, you're going for the ball to try to cut out the cross, and one time out of 10, you're going to dink it into your own net.
It's a better chance than letting Georgi Mihailovic take it at 3 yards.
Yeah, if I'm a goalkeeper, I'm okay with my defenders sliding in, making that last ditch effort. But and they did actually credit Calvin Harris on the second goal, but it's definitely ricocheted off another Dallas player. It comes off of the goalkeeper and then off the Dallas defender, who I forget who it was, but
I saw a score sheet that had the defender Junqua.
Oh, okay.
Given on it. So
MLSsoccer.com is a liar to me then. but
it's disputed. I always there must be all the committee resources must go to Disco and not the the dubious goals committee.
I think so. You know, Musa gets a good goal back here. Dallas looks very aimless, and their attack is just not quite effective, is it? Musa certainly brings something to them, but I feel like the attacking mid pieces around him just, yeah, a bit of a failure to launch. And Colorado, man. Also, I completely forgot Zach Steffen played for them now until this game.
They're good.
Always great to see him. They're sitting in fourth place, and like they're not electric. They're conceding goals, but they're winning games. And if you're a Rapids fan, you'll take that any day.
Speaking of teams that are winning games, and if you're a fan, you'll take that any day. Vancouver got 2 goals on the road. And
anyway,
one in Seattle for the first time since 2016.
Oof.
That was a unique one. There were a couple of factors that made it strange. The play, there was, I think, a great use case for VAR, where, you know, the play is moving forward. You can maybe make out that there was a collision behind the play, but the referee doesn't do anything with it, and they push through it. And VAR definitely looked that Reagan stomped right on the back of Ryan Gault's leg. Very painful looking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely lots of talk of like, a fairly soft red. I mean, at least on the broadcast, and I know obviously Sounders fans are not pleased with that one. I mean,
it's a stomp.
It's a stomp. And whether you have intent or not, when you have studs up into the back of a calf, and then as Sartini pointed out in the press conference, he said at the beginning of the season, they let us know they were going to be really hard on these kinds of tackles from behind on DPs. And while I don't think DPs should be judged differently in refereeing decisions, as ever, you know that I'm like, if they fucking told you what they're going to clamp down on and you keep doing it, I don't think you have an argument either way. And I'll just say this to be spicy about this rivalry. If this is Cubas on Rui Diaz, no question. It's a red card. No question. So, you know, Seattle fans, you can come at me the next time this happens to the Whitecaps, and I'm sure you won't have to wait that long, but, like, it's a stomp from behind on the back of a calf, the studs in. Yes, I think it's a little harsh. I think if they'd called it a yellow, I would have been, like, deservedly so. So that obviously doesn't help their cause. What also doesn't help their cause is that Seattle gifts us 2 balls in their half. The first one to Ryan Gauld, just a really, really bad giveaway. He immediately turns on the Jets, steals it, and buries it. And then
turnover by Andres Kubas, and then it's Brian White getting the turnover for the second one.
Yeah, we love a Brian White Ryan Gauld combo goal thing.
I love this turnover. I love that specific interception because Arriaga and Krylock were going like, like they were doing the supermarket, the supermarket dodge where they were trying to both go back and forth, and then White is just like, actually, it's me.
Well, and I think that Krylock is doing the right thing. Like he's just getting in the way and putting the pressure on and pulling the defender away and. You know, I think he sees Brian White steaming in and goes, I can make this complicated for the defender. And then, of course, we had Alex Roldan sent off for his bad tackle, which was, I mean, just a definite rush of blood to the head and a, like, very purposeful version of Reagan's, another stomp in the back.
Stop? I had an arm in the back, but maybe I missed it. Maybe I missed the
I thought there was another trip and a rake of the cleat across the back of the leg.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Right.
I think there was also a significant push as well, which...
If there was a boot, then that changed my opinion. See, I was going to say there was an arm in the back, which definitely is a foul. As I, you know, was glancing at it, I guess that is, when you talk about shoulder barges, that's one of the things that are not allowed. But I did, if there was the boots, that's one thing. There was, I was thinking based on just the elbow alone, I was thinking, you know, obviously that sucks, but I was like, do I think that hurt less than the Klaus one? No.
Yeah. Fair. So I was really, really curious about this. Obviously, it's always sensational to watch your team play the Sounders and win 2-0 and have two players sent off from the opposing side. I was happy. But I was also really curious to hear what Brian Schmetzer would have to say about this. I'm a big fan of his press conferences because generally... he's very straight and to the point. He keeps impeccable notes. He's got an impeccable memory for what happened in the game and just about every other game his team's ever played, down to just a stupid amount of detail. So I was curious to watch it. And I mean, he calls Roldan's tackle and decision that got him sent off stupid. Those are his words. So he definitely, you know, thought that one was a red card. He mentioned the other one with kind of a, you know, the referee makes the first big play of the game kind of thing. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's a diplomatic way of putting it. But really, his overall thing was down to his team's performance. And I think that that's what, A, makes Brian Schmetzer a great coach, but B, tells us everything we need to know about this match. It was great for Vancouver, but they didn't just win because Seattle had two players sent off. It helped. Don't get me wrong. It helped. It helped. But overall, I mean, Seattle's inability to... I mean, they create chances. I believe they're fairly high up in the league in terms of number of chances created. But it's just so disjointed, and it feels like there's always a player open. But the player with the ball seems to be the one that's convinced he needs to take the shot. And it just seems to always be the wrong guy, the wrong angle. We saw them in the previous week finally get a good result, but... defensively, I mean, just two really big mistakes, and if it wasn't enough to sort of rain down the criticisms on your team and the defense, Arriaga was also traded today to New England.
Wow!
So that tells you everything you need to know about what Brian Schmetzer thought of thought of that performance. He is now, yeah, with New England, and also, while we're talking about it, New England signed former Timbers keeper Ivicic as well today.
It's the window. The window's closing, isn't it?
I believe it is, because I also just saw another bit of interesting news. Do we want to talk any more about this Vancouver game?
No. Anything else we can there's Vancouver signing news, but we can talk about that at a later time.
Well, that's what I just saw. I didn't
That's
realize.
Right. Let's do a roundup of that closer to the end.
Cool.
I always love to, as a Whitecaps fan, want to watch to see the LAFC team sheet with Kai Kamara right on top.
Yeah,
that was an interesting game against New York Red Bulls. Red Bulls score on the eighth minute off of a corner, which I guess that was a headed own goal as well. But then LAFC get the even up with a penalty. Nealis was going step by step with him, but never played the ball, so he kind of ran into him. The Emil Forsberg bangs in a corner to make it 2-1 for New York. But Bouanga, I have written on my sheet, wow, 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 wow.
Yeah, the dude just only fires fucking lasers. It's really absurd.
Outside the box. Stoppage time.
Like, it was hit with as much speed and venom as his penalty. And it was a much different play to have to make. I also really appreciated just the total unwillingness to mark Forsberg on his goal. Just not a single player. Also notable in this one was Aaron Long went off like in the third minute with what looked like a bad injury. I don't know if we have any update on that situation, but could spell trouble for LAFC in the injury department, if that's going to be a...
He that was with on a play against Van Zier, Dante Van Zier, but he came up clutching his knee. Aaron Long, long time New York Red Bull as well.
Right, so yeah, of course.
That is very unfortunate. This is one we can we talked last time about Olivier Giroud. Olivier Giroud is coming, so. They've got reinforcements, but not at his position. Olivier Giroud, Aaron Long. I found this to be pretty spicy, as you noted. It's not like these teams will meet each other again during the regular season. LAFC is not currently, you know, in the top four in the West, and in New York is, but this gave me, you know, the vibes of a team that two teams that want to be considered as contenders. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and I think that's been the biggest difference with Red Bull, right? Like they are bringing an intensity to their games that I think has been missing, even when they've been performing okay. Because they were definitely kind of a sleeper team last year. But, I agree. There's just an aggressiveness to their play that they look like they're there to make a statement. And almost did, if not for Denny Bwanga. And whomst amongst us has not coughed up some points to Denny Bwanga. More will follow.
Isn't that true? Cincinnati pick up 3 points in Atlanta. Big road win for them.
Yeah. Almada's goal, very good. Just wraps his foot around and curls it in. Corey Baird gets one for Cincinnati. And then another, just DeAndre Yedlin has just all the space in the world here. Just prime real estate down the wing. And he just floats in this beautiful but rather dangerous cross into none other than Lucho Acosta, which I'm like, if you can float a ball in that's going to be able to come down off the chest of all foot, like 5'2", 5'4" of Lucho Acosta, but like drops right between the two tall center backs for Atlanta. Oof.
I think the thing that was funny about that is that I think that he was trying that all night. And I think that it wasn't, not that they were bad, but there was plays like that were attempted on numerous occasions.
Right. Yeah.
And when he did get the ball at Acosta's feet, I almost felt the commentary skipped a beat. Like they were just sort of mentally already moving on past it. And they're like, wait, no, that was completed.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you've got DeAndre Yedlin and Lucho Acosta, like, yeah, you're going to say, can one of you just kick it to the other one, like, 5 or 6 times, and probably it'll get us a goal? not that I've seen the coach's notes, but I imagine it went a little bit something like that. Montreal played Orlando. This one, for me, was not a bad showing from Montreal, but they think they've won it late through a Lassiter goal. But
they just got pasted by Seattle.
Yeah.
Something like 5-0. So I'm sure this is a little bit more to their liking.
Absolutely. A much better performance than that one. But Angulo comes in. He decides, we'll be taking that point with you. Sammy Piette's ball. Just an absolute peach through Orlando's lines to Mason Toy for that first goal. Oh,
that was really good.
You know, I know I've been sometimes critical of Piet, especially the Canadian men's national team. But like when he's on, like he's so underrated as a midfielder. I mean, obviously he's tough as nails, but some of his passes that break lines, just absurd. We love it.
That was so good. Ojeda's cross was great on the Angulo goal as well.
Yeah.
I thought that the penalty against Sirois here was a little soft because he got the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I didn't see any angle that convinced me he really cleaned out the player first. He definitely takes out the player's feet, but for me it looked a little bit more 50-50, like both players have the right to go for that. But I'm glad he wasn't sent off for it. I think if you're going to call that angle, it's fine.
The referee was spicy. He'd already handed out a yellow for dissent. I kind of feel like, you know, there was just like a certain amount of like, see what I do, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. Challenge me on that. See what I do.
One of the more interesting, maybe not games, but results was, Austin coming to Houston, grabbing a goal, notable for the fact that A, Austin won, and also B, that they actually scored a goal. Rangone stabs one home after a late breakaway, like late in the game. Houston's attack looking very much depleted right now. As it is, we know there's definitely key injuries there. I think I heard Herrera might be back in the mix or coming back, which hopefully that happens soon for Houston, because it was not a great, not a classic match, but definitely a big win for Austin, who've not been great.
That was a great, one of the credits I give on that goal comes to Brad Stuver for that goal kick. I think that everybody responded really, I think that it was a great goal kick through the center to Fodry, and also coming late in the game on the 86th minute, I feel that people feel that they caught people sleeping.
Yeah.
There have been a few of those. Maybe I'm just over, you know, focusing on a couple of things, but I feel like there was a couple of quickly taken balls and a couple of turnovers where a couple of teams were caught napping this week.
No, you saw correctly. I think there was at least four goals that came from quick restarts or visionary passes from deep.
One of the ones in my notes comes from Minnesota 3, Charlotte 0 in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Charlotte started this bad. Charlotte started this on the front foot. Great save from Dane St. Clair. But the blind pass in the defensive end is collected by Minnesota. Robin Lud has a high cross that falls to Oluwaseyi.
Yep. And Dotson does the damage in the end.
At some point, Robin Lud, I don't know exactly what happened, but it's like he sort of slipped or there was some issue and he basically like went head first into a defender.
Ooh.
And then when he scores the Minnesota second, he's got a big shiner on his forehead.
I missed that.
He's like, yeah, and he's got like a big...
Just a big old goose egg on top.
That's right.
Taking one for the team. I like Robin Lud, you know? we like a big, just tough, like legs like tree trunks striker. Speed, you know, like he kind of reminds me of Robbie Keane a little bit. Just big strapping lad.
I got to credit MLS that this was a week that had lots of rivalries in it. Mm. And for whatever reason, they have stopped hitting people over the head with rivalry week.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I saw that at any point as a branding.
You're right.
And this would usually be where you would find it, where you have, you know, the Missouri game, you had, you know, a California game, you had a Cascadia game. They chose not to go in that direction.
That reminds me, I forgot it in my notes, but the Seattle-Vancouver game, the cutaway to the fan in the crowds in the away section holding the Cascadia Cup on each goal. Great camera work. Thank you for having that one ready. Credits to everyone all around. It was the perfect game. That might have been my favorite moment. I'm sorry, I forgot about that.
LA and San Jose. I almost said St. John. We don't have a MLS team yet.
Well, it might as well have been. Next time, San Jose might just do better by putting out the St. John Rovers or whatever they would be titled. Because, ouch.
Yeah, this was a weird one where if you look at the, like, the real wonder is that they made it back to being 4-3.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point.
But, like, if you look at it at the end, it's like this game certainly had a lot to it, but the dominating flavor is that LA Galaxy go up 4-1. Thanks to we start with Yoshida collecting a goal kick from Yarbrough and hitting and starting a pass sequence right down the middle for Gabriel Peck to score. We have a San Jose penalty from an errant elbow, which is scored. Yoshida then gets a header to make it 3-0. A pinball of a goal scored by San Jose, which is pinged off the wall, and it just sort of falls madcapedly to Rodriguez, who scores it. Ricky Pouge somehow manages to shrug off all of his defenders like they were a heavy coat.
Yeah. He's something else. I really hate how much I like him as a player. I know I've said it before, but he's 24.
Wow.
It's just, yeah, a really, really absurd talent. Great efforts from him in this one. But you're right. It was kind of Galaxy that came unraveled in the end here. It wasn't, you know, so unraveled that San Jose was able to get anything out of this one. But I feel like, you know, if you're Galaxy, you definitely smell smoke from this one. Yeah, Espinoza scores a really easy goal. Gabriel Peck at some point just pulls up. I don't know if he had a cramp or what, but he just completely pulls off his man, and nobody steps in to stop the cross coming in, which lands to Espinoza. Ibobasi's pulled down. Zavaleta is sent off. Ibobasi scores the ensuing penalty, but of course it's this just horrendous start for San Jose that seals their fate in this one. And as ever with San Jose at this time of the year, they put in a performance where they can score 3 goals and still lose and still be dead last in the league. And LA Galaxy can give up a 4-1 lead to make it 4-3, and they're at the top of the table. So, San Jose, man, they're another team that I look at it on paper and I go, how are they not at least winning some games here? But 1 win, 8 losses, no ties. The San Jose Earthquakes way. All in. It's all or nothing. Mostly nothing.
Mostly nothing. I would say that compared to past, like, you know, even though we were talking about, you know, San Jose and Chicago as being teams on the lower end, I don't think this year that you see teams, like, really floundering, you know, like total no hopers. I think that
we'll get to one.
Well, we'll get to one. But I mean from the perspective of like no redeeming qualities.
Sure,
you know what I mean. There have been some San Jose seasons with no redeeming qualities, and I don't know that we're quite there. This is a team that has some quality in it.
I mean, some of their worst seasons were still seasons where Chris Wondolowski was scoring double digits and That's ripping true. Records up. So, yeah, we've been there with them for sure. Yeah, well, that brings us to Toronto versus New England. Before we even talk about the game, we'll just take a look at New England here. They're the very bottom of Eastern Conference and MLS table in general. With 1 point. Wait, is that right? No. 4 points. Sorry. Took those 3 points away. Oh, no. San Jose is still below them.
They got some points they can rub together.
they got some points they can rub together. But and I know they've had issues with some injuries as well. But another team that you just you look at the talent across the charts with them and just yeah, it doesn't look so good. Obviously, New England has signed two players since this game happened, so they're ready to bring in some reinforcements. This goal, this back heel from Prince Owusu, is just as sublime of a touch you'll see in the box. And it's sort of made all the more impressive by the fact that he gets fucking cleaned out almost as soon as he dinks it. He just gets barged through and hits the deck with some force. And that was, you know, probably the most aggression that New England showed in this game. You know, not the most convincing thing from TFC that you'll ever see, but obviously really important points for them. As they've, I would hardly call it strong, but you know, they're sitting in fifth place, a point behind Columbus. So it's definitely been better. And it could definitely still be better. I do feel like the East right now is one of those, is the conference where I feel like, it's there's going to be movement. I think the fact that New York City is, you know, three spots below Toronto right now, I feel like that one doesn't stay that way for long.
As we've talked before with Toronto, there is also the element that it's been, it could be better. It could be worse. You know, this is, there
it's
are
MLS.
Some,
it can always be worse.
It was worse last year. And so to, you know, pick up these points is good. Another team that's suffering in the East is Nashville. And they had to go to Miami. Not a great place. Not a great place to suffer.
Not a great place to suffer at all. I feel like Nashville didn't actually look too terrible in this one. You know, Negri has an own goal that makes it look like Nashville might actually have some luck in this one, but you know,
you gotta love when the team scores and they go to the manager reaction camera and it shows the manager looking at the iPad like what what happened?
Yeah, that Gary, was the feeling for sure.
Gary Jones trying to roll out the charts to figure out like how are we up?
Yeah, that wasn't even in the game plan. but that's definitely where I feel like their luck ended. I mean, Mukhtar's there. I mean, certainly the chances he's creating are okay, but he needs better service. I also feel like the sort of double-edged sword of having a player like him is you kind of want him to take all the chances, but there's definitely two or three plays there where I feel like there's a better player open, but you're not going to tell Mukhtar to not take the shot. But it is all for naught because Messi gets a great goal. Busquets just barely glances one in from his head with a really great header in off a Messi cross. And then Messi wins a late penalty. I don't know if you're Nashville or you're Gary Smith, how you feel about this one, but I'm like, it could be worse. It's things that, as you say, have not been great for Nashville. They're second from the bottom in the East. And defensively, they've been struggling. Offensively, kind of been struggling as well. But a great team. I still feel like Lucas McNaughton is one of the few defenders that really seems up to the task of just barging around into Inter-Miami players and being like, I don't care whose name is on the back of your jersey. I'm going in hard.
Great goal line clearance by McNaughton as well.
Yeah, exactly. So the pieces for me are there with Nashville. Maybe they could add something else in, but I think this is just going to be the story for a number of teams this season that don't play that well, but don't bury their chances and are on the wrong side of three goals from Inter-Miami.
I definitely think that like you said, the service is an issue, and a lot of those chances are just like from a distance that he's attempting. It is Gary Smith. I said Gary Jones. I think that was a mistake on me. there was another back pass from Nashville. You look at it and think, oh, well, there was a point here where they had a goal. Nashville has a goal, and they hit the bar. You know, maybe this could have been something. But then you by the end of the game, enough nonsense happens in the game. It's like, okay, well, you hit the bar. Well, they also hit the bar, and they had a goal disallowed for offside. Yeah. So the alternate history is not looking good for you. You provided the mistake that they will absolutely capitalize on once they can get the ball at Messi's feet.
Yeah. An alternate timeline of this game is like this ends 3-3, but also could have ended 6-0 for Miami. So that's how it be sometimes. And I think the last game we have, if I'm not mistaken, is New York City FC versus DC United.
Yeah, I didn't find that particularly interesting. It was at Citi Field, and wow, it looks like shit.
Yep. Yep, that new stadium can't come soon enough. Just looked real, real kinds of bad. Just woeful marking from DC. Boy, they are pretty easily caught out of position.
I had hot butter passes on my...
I like that.
My nuts.
Yeah, New York City have speed for days. They've not been lights out good this season. I think it's rather surprising they're only in eighth place, but they've been stingy defensively. They've just had trouble getting everything going forward. And again, they're a team that I feel like for sure would maybe need a couple more pieces to be a really successful playoff team this season. But I think that of teams that are sitting like in the middle of the pack, a New York City to me feels like their likely trajectory is up for the rest of the season.
I would think so. That pass from Santi Rodriguez was amazing.
Yeah.
For the second goal.
Yeah, that dude can ball.
Forward to your point of they haven't looked like super great. That, you know, they've been looked okay, but not necessarily super great. I wrote in my notes, New York City had another lethal break, no goal. And then I just wrote times two beside
it. Yeah, that's kind of the summary of events, my friend. Where's the lie?
As you noted, their biggest win was probably off the field on April 12th when New York officials voted to approve a potential 25,000 seat stadium in Queens.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's interesting to know what the dynamics are now, because the 25,000 almost seems like, it almost feels like Toronto's trying to, like, that was the size or near the size of BMO, and it feels like they're always trying to find ways to get out of that. It almost feels like the true, you know, aspiring social climber is looking above 50,000, but they are not going to go play in an NFL stadium, and they need to get out of the baseball stadiums. So that's a pretty cool idea, and it apparently will also come with affordable housing and a school and a whole revitalization project. So hopefully that's a positive for the community there.
That would be all right. I mean, it's I'm not really much of a stadium fan per se, but I like the design. I mean, I think for, you know, trying to cram something into New York City the size of a soccer stadium is always going to be a little bit of a challenge. And as you say, if they can be made to cough up some dough and actually benefit the community in some way with more than just sprots, I think that's real cool.
The The other
and,
big
and like as much as we make fun, I'm like the City fans deserve it. Like nobody's having fun in City Field.
It's just one of those things where it's like it's outrageous that just you look at the sort of like the way that the baseball crease is right behind the goal line.
Yeah.
On one side, and it's like, I never see this this kind of thing anywhere else.
Yeah.
Only in MLS.
Yeah.
Are they like, this is fine. Also in terms of sort of MLS news, we had the vote for rule changes.
We did.
So the big one that we saw this week is that we have the referees announcing VAR calls. What did you think of that?
It's a little NFL-y in taste for me, but I think it can only help improve the experience for fans in the stadium to actually know what the hell is going on. Because even if you disagree, at least you know what the call is. I'm fine with it. I don't think it's a major change. It's not slowing down the game.
I love it. I think it's really fun. I VAR and people are always, like you said, people need to know what's going on with it. And it's, some people think that it's, think of it as negative. People don't know whether or not to react to goals anymore because they don't know if, you know, VAR is going to pull it aside. Well, if that's in any way a concern to you, then it's necessary to increase the theatrics of VAR. You know, I like in the Premier League, they have the big screens. Not that the Premier League has the best VAR implementation, but that specific thing about it is good.
Yeah. I'll do you one better. I think they should hot mic the referee for the whole game. That's the only person I really want to hear chirping. So,
referee, would you be able to select it on Apple TV? Like,
turn on the referee commentary.
Home, Apple TV home radio referees.
Absolutely, I'm into it.
The other ones. There's some more GAM. There's one that's a little thorny. It's the way that designated players and under 22 players are treated. And I think that the idea generally was supposed to be that, like, I think the idea behind this was supposed to be that if you had young designated, you could have more young designated players if you had fewer overage players. And now they're just letting you have both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like teams with three senior DPs can have just one U22 DP. Teams with two senior DPs and one DP or a DP that can be bought down with TAM can have up to three. So you could have, so previously you could have five, you know, senior designated players and U22 designated players, or you could have four, but it just prevents you from having three. Geez, if I can only think of a team that is trying to cram themselves full of senior designated players and would like to have a little bit more freedom in this front. Why choose, they say to Inter Miami, why not have everything you want?
The best of all worlds.
That was my big takeaway. That was my big takeaway from the Messi thing. And the claim, you know, Tata Martino going after after they lost to Monterrey and saying, oh, MLS will never win in this, or, you know, MLS will be at a disadvantage in this. I gotta be accurate to what it said. MLS will be a disadvantage to this competition unless there's more depth in the roster. On one hand, MLS needs either more players or fewer games, and so there's a gem of truth to that. But also, Miami chose to do this.
Yeah.
Miami chose to have this team. There are ways to build the team other than the way they've chosen to do it, and so to go to lose with one of the most star-studded MLS teams of all time. I'm not necessarily saying the best, but you look at other teams that have gone to the quarterfinals of CONCACAF champion competition. You look at who was on it. They cannot say that they didn't have firepower. And if they say, oh, we lose, you know, we have an issue, if we lose somebody due to injury, it's like, yeah, that's the problem with signing a bunch of players from Barcelona. Four players, 4X.
Yeah, and I mean,
Barcelona players.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that the coach has got to be a coach, but I mean, if the argument is, if we could just spend however much money we wanted and sign whoever we wanted, what you kind of already have, and also, like, that's literally the reason why there's a salary cap, so you don't end up with one team with the deepest pockets like every other fucking league in the world that win every single thing all of the time because they just have the money to do it. And I know that's not what Martino said, and I know that's not his ultimate point here with this, but yeah, also, hey, maybe do it with the best player in the world in your squad and stop whining about when you lose to teams that are built differently and outplay you. A thought.
Just a thought. So, and that's how it applies to the rule changes, is that the old rules used to say you can have, essentially, in essence, you can have four designated players if you wanted to have three senior ones, or you could have five of them if you had more young players. And now they just say, well, you just have six.
Yeah.
For six for everyone. Maybe that'll be they're not the only team that's taking advantage of this. So as noted, the window is closing. Olivier Giroud is on his way to LAFC.
That one for me was I was honestly surprised. I don't know why, given the players that have been coming to MLS now, and I think I still somehow underestimate the full Messi effect. But yeah, I don't know. For me, this is still kind of a head scratcher. Is LAFC seems to be a fan of their older players and really bank on the experience, and obviously, like, that can go well for you. Is Giroud the guy that's going to get you there? I don't know, man. Maybe.
Just wait until we get the Olivier Giroud, Kai Kamara assists.
Hell yeah.
The great
Giroud doesn't score a single goal, but he does assist Kai Kamara to get him across the line to be the all-time
oh yeah, that's scorer. That's what we want. Inter Miami signed another guy because, of course.
Yep.
Of course, why wouldn't they? Matias Rojas from Corinthians in Brazil. The Vancouver Whitecaps signed Australian teen Giuseppe Bavalina, which I just think of the song Mr. Dabble, the Del the Funky song, Homo Sapiens song, Mr. Dabalina.
Yeah.
Mr. Bob Bavalina. That's how I think of it. That was my first thought.
We'll work on that in-game chant. yeah, it's an interesting signing. I mean, I gotta admit, I don't always fully understand the Whitecaps' approach to scouting and the areas that they feel they need to fill and who they fill them with, but Sure, why not? You know, we've had luck bringing in youngsters from other squads, so. Sure. Another Whitecap notable thing.
Yes.
While it's on the top of my mind, is also this weekend was Brian White tying with Camilo Sanveso for all-time Whitecaps scorer, which I feel I was like, I had no idea that that was a record that was coming close to being beaten, and certainly bodes well for Brian White to be at that point.
That's been great. I mean,
I feel like a genie's about to come out of a lamp, or a curse is about to be lifted or something.
Oh man, the vibe reparation, vibe when he scores his next one, the vibe reparation that's gonna occur is
just so good. This giant spectral whoosh out of BC Place as that goal goes in.
That was the thing, and you know, if it's it feels so long ago now, but since the, you know, debacle where Camilo ducked out of a club option to go to Mexico, the Camilo was at the time, you know, beloved and a perfect fit, and until the current stable situation involving Ryan Gauld and Brian White came about, it was just like, there kind of was like no real peace from then till now. So perhaps not necessarily, you know, to erase the good times of Camilo, but to finally finally dispel the bad vibes. That'll be a great milestone to hit.
Absolutely.
So that'll be fun. What are you excited for the next match day?
I have no idea. I haven't looked at the schedule. Yeah, to warn me with these future looking questions. Let me quickly have a look here.
Oh, that's the other thing I want to mention. Sorry, is the Canadian Championship is on route? Is starting. Toronto FC plays Simcoe Rovers FC.
Hell fucking yeah.
On Wednesday of this week. So that'll
Simcoe,
be
fun. don't let me down.
that'll be fun.
I think there's two interesting matches next week. And I believe, yes, they're both also cross conference ones. Cincinnati, Colorado. Cincinnati, obviously, we know what they can do. Colorado. Turn to page, it seems. How will they hold up? And Philadelphia, Real Salt Lake. Again, two teams that have been performing well. I think we hold in slightly different regard. I'm interested to see if there's some possibility for some upsets.
That should be fun. Columbus and Montreal should be fun. New York,
Miami,
New York...
New England could have a flavor to it.
A flavor. New York, Vancouver. New York, Vancouver could be fun. Sure. I wish I had. I. That's kind of creeping up. That's kind of crept up on me. I have good memories of seeing the Whitecaps play the Red Bulls in Red Bull Arena. So I'll have to keep an eye on that. One other note from Camp Yell that I want to leave you with is that during the Atletico Ottawa Cavalry match. As you could sometimes end up in Camp EL, sometimes the equipment is, and fans can be in close proximity to one another, or perhaps sometimes the audiences, you know, if you don't have if there's some sparseness, you can get heard on the broadcast that they were lining up for a corner, and you can hear somebody say, "Hey, name here, name person here, this one's going right in," and they scored it.
Excellent.
That was the key moment. That was
you shouted enough times, it'll eventually come true.
Yeah, you can't do that every goal now. That's the thing, is that they can't. It was too perfect that one time. Really
excellent.
Really amused the commentators, though. where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Instagram at thatsomls, also thatsomls.com, and on Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts, we're thatsomls. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes, please do that. You can find me online on the terrible website at Team Bates, at the terrible website that has photos at Team Bates C, and at teambates.bsky. You know, it's on Blue Sky. It's Blue Sky. Team Bates on Blue Sky. And at www.team-bates.com.
And also by carrier pigeon, if you just whisper Team Bates into its ear.
Yeah, I'll find it. Don't worry about it. It'll be there. Get to you. That's right. Until we speak again, don't get sent off by shoulder charging.
Don't do it.